Welcome to the Raw Growth Podcast. My name is Mara Hovelman, and I am the host and counselor for this podcast. This podcast is for educational purposes, and it provides free counseling to participants in exchange for these sessions to be posted anonymously on various podcast platforms. The goals for this podcast are to help those in need of counseling who cannot access or afford it otherwise, to raise awareness about mental health factors such as depression, anxiety, ADHD, autism, trauma and toxic families, personality disorders, relationship issues, and other concerns. We also aim to destigmatize and demystify the therapeutic or counseling process so those who are unsure about seeking help may feel more comfortable with the process. Finally, we hope to educate listeners on various types of counseling modalities so seeking the mental health worker who is the best fit for you feels less daunting and confusing. Thank you for joining us today, and I hope that today enlightens you and helps you with your own growth. Hi, Ria. So nice to meet you. I'm Mara. What brings you here today?
Hi, Mara. As you know, I have been following a group for daughters who are survivors of narcissistic abuse in the family. And I noticed you post about this interesting opportunity to come talk about some of our personal experiences, and with the hope that somebody else might be able to relate to it and seek out the necessary resources so that they can help better their life or recover from the trauma that they experienced. I thought it was an interesting opportunity to participate, and so here I am.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for joining the podcast and being open to talk about your experience.
Yeah, sure.
So did you want to tell me a little bit about what you've gone through and where you are today when it comes to your mental health and going through that experience?
I am originally Indian, and I grew up in India, completed my education there, and then part of my education there, and then moved to the States for my grad school degree and for work. So during all this transition from one country to another, there was a lot of cultural barriers that I was navigating, but there was also a lot of new information that I was absorbing along the way. I come from a very nuclear family where I was living with my parents and a younger sister. And there were times where I felt that the dynamic may not be as healthy as it was. Yeah, as it was like, there was a lot of screaming and yelling, and there was a lot of other things happening, very subtle things happening, which I did not recognize in the initial stages, and did not label it as toxic because nobody else labeled that as toxic. But once I moved out of my home from my work and from my education, and I started living with others, I realized that I was able to observe very closely how other parents interacted with their kids, and how it was very different from what was happening in my household. Now, because I did not have any reference point or any baseline for comparison at that point, I was forced to believe that the reality that I was in when I was younger, that is normal. And since then, I have started seeking out resources to better understand and identify what is different? What is different? Because I was feeling sad and unhappy for a major part of my life. I was feeling very unheard. I was feeling like I was always walking on eggshells. Anything that I was doing was not appreciated. And I was a bright scholar, but I felt like most of what I achieved in life was based on fear, my own fear. Because my parents had always threatened to stop our education, get us married off, or throw us out of the house because they were spending so much on our education. So it was mostly fear driven. My success was mostly fear driven instead of being something that I naturally chose to embrace. I was also not allowed to follow my passion in terms of the pathway that I took. I have little regrets with that, but as I grew older, I realized that it's important to stick to something that you're really passionate about. Otherwise, your work feels like a grind. And it really affects your mental health because you're trying to identify with something where you feel like you don't belong, if that makes sense. So as I moved to a different country, I think all of these things kind of came to a head all at once. There was this cultural identity that I was navigating. There was this thing about pa being passionate about the work I was doing that I was navigating. Then having received more reference points at this time, I was trying to understand like how is it that these people are so driven and they're always so su supported by their family, whereas I was not. I was outperforming people, but yet I received very less comfort or love or appreciation from my parents. And it came to a point where no matter what I do, nothing seemed right to them. That is when I started seeking answers. I suffered a serious mental health crisis during my grad school, especially as I was doing it during the pandemic. It was very isolating, and I was in a very small town where there were less people, and I grew up in an environment where I was always around people. I think the fact that I was always around people growing up kind of numbed the pain of the toxic dynamic that I was in. But when you're alone, you get more time to self-reflect, and then your mind is all over the place because it now doesn't have it's not seeing the familiar things around you. It does not have an outlet to keep you distracted. So yeah, it was then a struggle with my own mind to tame it and to be seeking trying to seek comfort in the discomfort. I reached out to my parents trying to express what was happening. But I realized that they're not used to it because I have never reached out to my parents with my discomfort. Either I was told to just suck it up, or I was told that I was being a bother to them. But this time I really didn't have any other outlet because I was in a different country. If I was living close to my parents, I'd probably still have my old friends to rely on, extended family. But during this moment of crisis, that is when things became all the more apparent that my parents are not the person I can rely on emotionally. And no matter what I do, I'm not going to get appreciated for anything. It was a very painful process of acceptance, which took several years. I started seeking therapy, and that was the first time I was seeking out therapy. So the first session did not go as well because I think I was participating less and I didn't know what to expect out of it. I was just going there for the sake of it, hoping that it was going to cure me miraculously, but that is not how it happened. And also being asked very personal questions felt very uncomfortable. Like, how much should I share about my parents? It feels like I'm betraying them. Like in the past, we were not allowed to express our emotions. If we did outside, then my parents felt very betrayed. So it was the same emotions playing in my mind over and over again. Like they might think that I have betrayed the family, da da da. So my first session with my therapist was not the best. They did help me optimize a few things in my life, though. So yeah, that is something good that I got out of it. But then I also started opening up more and more to some of my very close friends. And they also mentioned that this was what was happening is not healthy. I gave a pause of about 1 more year between therapies and now then restarted at a different clinic. And then I did a bit of EMDR, some talk therapy, and that helped a little bit. But even then, at that point, when I was asked very specific questions about my family, I would hesitate to answer. partly out of shame and partly out of guilt, guilt of betraying them, betraying their trust. And so that session was also kind of like, but at least I was slowly getting introduced to the idea of it, and that helped me understand that these resources exist, and maybe I need to make some changes at my end, like how I show up, so that I can make better use of these resources. So during this crisis, I also had to quit grad school because my mental health took a serious turn, and I was very sick with a lot of unknown diseases. I think it was something my doctors suspected that it was something autoimmune, but even after running a bunch of tests, it wasn't very conclusive. And then I started working during this time. I transitioned out of my grad school. I was there for my PhD. I wasn't able to complete it due to all of the mental health struggles, and I got a master's, and then I transitioned out into industry. And soon afterwards, I have had to get a surgery. And during that point, I had to call my mom to help me out. And she refused, flat out refused.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she flat out refused. And it was something that I ha had to be done. And at that point, I stood there begging with my mother to come and help me out. And I think that kind of, was a light bulb moment where I realized that my family is extremely toxic, and until they get something out of it, they're not going to be helping you. Even if it's your own kid, all the love that they have showered on you was very conditional. They're emotionally manipulative, and as long as we continue to serve them emotionally, tell them good things, validate their feelings, all is good. And also, part of it felt like my parents were very childish, and I was being the adult in the role, trying to calm them down, trying to pacify them, giving them resources so that they can help their kids better. And I mean, after that, after my surgery, my mom goes back to her hometown, and due to a small tiff, she decides to play blame game with me and turn a situation around where it was initially her fault, and stops contacting me for a long time. I went through during this phase. It was kind of like a reflective moment where I sought out different kinds of alternate modalities instead of therapy, such as meditation, being out more in nature, going to book clubs, being part of groups where our support systems which talks about narcissistic abuse, reading a lot about it, like just going to the library and reading tons and tons of books about communication, trying to understand how I can improve the situation in my favor, but also learning at the same time about narcissistic abuse, and everything in my life was already mentioned in those textbooks. That was a revealing moment. And then, I did a lot of reading, a lot of somatic therapy, like I said, alternate modalities, and self. I also read stuff around emotional regulation and self-care, self-love, which are not things that was taught in my family growing up. And then, how kids grow up with self-esteem issues, which was true in my case. Because everything that I did was always wrong in their eyes. Even my illnesses were invisible to them. I felt very invalidated throughout my life. And so during this time, I continued to read and read. And I'm right now between jobs, but I'm hoping that the moment I get a job, I'm gonna go back to therapy again, now that I have a better understanding of my situation. But my journey has been very rocky. I have felt extremely unsupported throughout my childhood and my adult life. I have felt supported only when it benefited my parents, not otherwise. I have also felt extremely humiliated and degraded in front of others. Like my parents had a tendency to compare me with other kids because I was outperforming them and kind of driving a wedge between us. Most of my childhood friendships had fallen off thanks to how my parents treated us like the winners in every situation. And I don't think it's a healthy approach because now that I look around, I feel like even children who may not have excelled during their school years are doing amazing in their lives. They have their life together. They have a loving, supportive environment around them. And they have jobs. They're not dependent, they're self-reliant, they're emotionally well-regulated, whereas I'm here in a severe mental health crisis, and I seem to not have any of it together. I also had to go through this phase of getting out of the guilt and shame of ratting out on my parents, if that makes sense. And coming to a point where I had to directly tell them that, I am seeking out these resources and I've been talking to people and none of what you have done to me seems healthy. Not that they would accept it again, like it was like more like a blame game, like, oh, you have also done a lot of things to us. It was always about me doing stuffs to them and never about them doing stuffs to us. So I have told them that I'll accept responsibility for my part and improve things, but you also need to accept responsibility for your part, and that hasn't happened yet, and I don't think it'll ever happen. But I think I reached a point where I had nothing much to lose, whether it was health-wise, academically, or even in terms of a job. So I kind of retaliated at a point in my life where I was failing in all directions, and I felt like it didn't have to be this way. It really didn't have to come to this in order for me to be advocating for myself and feeling heard. I could have, if I had all those resources early on, I could have done a better job of stopping this toxicity from festering while it was ha starting to happen. But I didn't have any guidelines, I didn't have any resources, nobody taught me. So I accepted what I saw. And at this point, I realized that I can eat, like, after all this reading, therapy, I realized that it is easier for me to spot a toxic person, or I should say, not a toxic person, but an instance when a person reveals something toxic about themselves, and to walk away from it or to just protect myself from it. There's no way I can change people, but at least I have the resources to try and protect myself and my inner peace. That has been my journey.
Thank you so much for sharing. Definitely, if we look at the autoimmune issues and the illness that you experienced, there's a very famous doctor who focuses on mental health called Gabor Mate, and he makes great parallels between those who have gone through childhood abuse, who have had to suppress their emotions for many years, developing these illnesses, whether it's autoimmune or cancer or any other types of illnesses. The body and the brain are so connected that when you're keeping in all of this emotion for so long, it takes a toll on the body. And he specifically for women, he noticed, 70% of people with autoimmune disorders are women. And why would that be? And a lot of it is because of this culture around women holding in their anger, women being victims more often, whether that's in their families or with their husbands. And it's a very interesting correlation, and I'm sorry that you had to go through that, and that you weren't supported when you were going through that. It's very common for those who are going into therapy who have had to keep secrets their entire lives. to feel very awkward and anxious, and that guilt and shame that you mentioned around opening up and actually talking about what has happened. Looking back on my own childhood, I was in therapy since like age 7 when my mom went through a divorce, and they were all very concerned about the impact that would have on me. And I had childhood therapy, and then I did some therapy in my teen years. I did therapy in college. It wasn't until recently that I actually started talking about the impact that my mother had on me and the things that, she would make me do, like parentify me. I would have to cook dinner. I would have to go to the corner store to pick up milk that was too heavy for me to carry in a carton of cigarettes, when I was less than 10 years old. And it's why didn't I tell anyone? Like, I don't even know if she told me specifically, don't tell your grandparents this, because my grandparents were the ones who mainly raised me. Even when she started buying me alcohol at a young age, I didn't say anything. It's like I led a double life almost. When I was at my grandparents during the week, I was one person, and then when I went to my mom's, I was a drinker and all this other stuff. And it's just amazing that power of like, oh, this is a secret and I have to keep this secret. And even when we go into therapy, there's confidentiality in therapy. Your parents aren't going to know what you say, but that doesn't matter to you inside. You're just so used to keeping it quiet for so long, that it just feels wrong to finally break that silence. Can you relate to that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Like there have been instances where I think my mom was a little bit insecure and scared that she might get some backlash from family members, based on like, say if somebody hurt me on the playground, I think she also operated from a point of fear where she felt like somebody might tell her that, oh, you are a bad mother, because of which your kid is getting beaten up on the playfield. You didn't do anything. And as a result, she kind of, instead of emotionally comforting me, she would lash out at me so that I would stay silent in fear.
Yeah. And it is that fear that's a big factor for us. You mentioned fear was a big factor in you being academically successful, because it was the only option for you. I can relate, my grandparents. Well, they weren't the toxic ones. My grandma was very strict. She was the teacher herself, so she wouldn't accept anything less than perfection with my grades. I would tell her, I'm doing my best, and she would say, well, then do better than your best. And while I wouldn't consider her a toxic parent, I think that even non-toxic parents have some toxic parenting that goes on, because it just gets passed down generation to generation. And as a parent, you do bring out your own insecurities and what was forced on you, onto your children. But that's very different. When it came to my own mother, there was more this jealousy aspect where I was afraid to succeed, because then she would be jealous of me if I was doing better than she
Absolutely.
was in her life.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. So there has been instances where our parents used to dress me and my sister up as little men instead of women. I think I got appreciated more when I dressed up as a man as opposed to when I dressed more feminine. And as a result, it has taken me several years to come and embrace that side of me, like the feminine side of me. And even then, my mom seemed a little bit, resentful of that. But surprisingly, she herself dresses extremely feminine. So, yeah, there was kind of like a jealousy thing going on there, it seemed. Also, if I performed really well, then she would make comments like, oh, yeah, you're not going to listen to me now because you think that you have gotten this grade. So you think that you're amazing and you know it all. Even if I'm trying to prove something with data and evidence, that was overlooked and it was all her emotions that was poured out. And also coming to that point where you mentioned that your grandmother wanted you to excel, I think like what I understand from my own experience, there's nothing wrong in parents or caregivers wanting their kids to excel, but then they also need to provide the emotional comfort and the outlet so that the kids can come to them and tell them what's going wrong, why they can't perform well, or what's going on in their minds. Because it's not a simple thing that, oh, this person cannot perform because they're dumb. It doesn't work like that. There's something going on. So they need to dig into the details of that, provide them with the resources to help them succeed, and also provide them with the emotional comfort and guidance instead of just saying, hey, do better. Because it's also their responsibility to provide that help. Kids just don't appear out of nowhere and start performing and overperforming. They need all of the information and resources that they can get in order to succeed. And they can only succeed out of fear for so long.
Fear is what puts us into this fight or flight mode. And when you live in that, you do burn out. You do develop, like in high school, I had psychosomatic nausea. So I was nauseous just like all the time. I couldn't eat. They did tests, it was nothing. When a few circumstances in my life changed, that went away. So I didn't believe them at the time when they were like, it's in your head.
Yes. Yeah. Me too. When doctors would try to prescribe anxiety pills, I'm like, anxious? What are you talking about? I'm not anxious. I'm performing well in class. I have a good set of friends. I'm not anxious. What have I got to be anxious about? But that's not the case. Our mind suppresses all of this information, and then all of a sudden it plays out in unrealistic ways.
And I think because we grow up so fast and we are so numb to our emotions that we think we're coping so well. We think, oh, this would affect someone else poorly, but me, I'm doing fine. I'm doing great. I can handle it. And it turns out that you were just in this place of being numb, being in fight or flight, and no, you weren't coping with it at all. You were just ignoring it.
And I think it gets even worse if somebody is neurodivergent. It's a completely different story if your parents don't acknowledge that and just try to push you into the same bucket as other neurotypical kids. And then you're not competing with the same set of people, you're competing at very different planes, right? And if they don't provide you with the right resources to help you adjust your schedule, manage your emotions better, then then I think failure is unavoidable.
Yeah, I was diagnosed with ADHD at age 30. And it just made my entire life make so much sense. And when I tried talking to my grandma about it, she's supportive, but she's like, well, you can't use that as an excuse. You have to learn how to overcome it. You have to still, be successful XYZ ways. And then of course she says, well, I experienced that too, so I think we're all a little ADHD. That's always a fun statement to try to rebuttal.
And on top of that, I think every generation is different. Every generation is dealing with a different set of problems. Parents not being able to see that, it kind of hurts the child, isn't it? So a typical comment in my house would be, hey, if we could do this, why couldn't you do it? Hey, I'm dealing with a completely different set of problems and I don't know how to navigate it.
Exactly. Even like financially now, like my partner's dad is completely unaware that life costs more now than it did when he was our age. And he's just like, well, how come you're not saving and investing and all that stuff? And it's like, well, because we live paycheck to paycheck, because groceries cost 10 times what they used to, and taxes for the house are, so high, and all of these things. And that's a very like narcissistic point of view. It's like, well, this is what worked for me, so I know what's best, and that's going to work for
Exactly.
you.
Yeah. And also, it's like, living in a bubble and have a very narrow mindset.
So where are you as far as your mental health right now? You mentioned that you're still feeling like you're in the middle of this mental health crisis. So
Yeah, I think sometimes when too much is revealed to you, then you also kind of go in shock and do not know how to process it. Now that I've come to the realization that this is what it is. It is a bit of it has been a bit of a trouble trying to absorb all of it and coming to terms with it. I'm sure it'll be easier over time, but I think it's a constant journey every single day, waking up and choosing yourself and not letting this all this bad memories or bad thoughts let it get to you or make you go down. And constantly recalibrating, trying to be your best advocate. It's a journey in progress, and I think that is how it's going to be every single day. There's going to be a lot of ups and downs, but the important thing is to try and be as stable as you can.
Yeah, and how are you managing? What do you find helps with being as stable as you can?
I think for me, again, doing a lot of breath work, going out in nature, and just reading articles around it, that really helps, like positive affirmations, the kind of affirmations that you may not have heard from your family members who were your primary caregivers. That really helps. But again, you have to keep on reminding yourself because, see, one day somebody comes and criticizes you, and again, you might fall into that loop of overthinking and also feeling like you're not worthy enough and not empowered enough to save yourself.
Yeah, this concept of feeling worthy enough, it's one that I am very familiar with. It's one that my partner struggles with quite a lot right now as well. Did you feel comfortable going into your experience of feeling worthy or not feeling worthy in a little bit more detail?
Yeah, I think when I quit my PhD, despite having like great GPAs, large number of papers, actually even more papers than some of my peers, I kind of spiral into this crisis mode where I'm like, what is wrong with me? Why can't I get anything done? And then, yeah, so that was one phase. The second phase was where whenever I get laid off a job, I take it very personally instead of understanding that it's like a universal phenomenon and everybody's going through it. Or days when I'm sick, I think that's when it strikes the most. And I don't feel like I have a caregiver to help me out with stuff. I'm like, oh, I should just give up and not do life. But yeah, I mean, all of this when combined together, it really pulls me down. And I feel like I'm not worthy enough to worthy enough to be the person that I had envisioned myself to be. But again, I think what has helped me is trying to recalibrate and taking one day at a time and understanding that we're humans and we may have all these lofty ambitions, but we may never be able to make those happen. And it's okay. Those don't.
Yeah, Definitely, we need to change and manage our expectations as life moves on. As a child, we have a completely different idea of what adulthood looks like, as opposed to when we actually reach adulthood, and you're like, well, I'm not an adult yet.
And I think your parents have, like, if you have narcissistic parents, they have an even different worldview of what your life should look like, which can sometimes be very unrealistic. Setting up unrealistic standards for their kids can be very damaging to their mental health.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, I think this idea of being worthy enough to live your best life, essentially. And I think it comes down to being worthy of being happy. When you grow up with narcissistic, toxic, abusive parents, you don't experience that happiness. So I think it's almost like you're wondering if you feel worthy of something that you haven't fully experienced yet. You're working to attain this new experience, this place of peacefulness. I prefer to say like feeling peaceful instead of feeling happy, because happy is just a very temporary in the moment emotion. But reaching this place of peace, from the moment you were born, you never knew what peace was.
Yes, exactly. True.
And I think it can definitely be a feeling of worthiness, but it can also be a fear of the unknown. The fear of, if I aim for this, will I ever achieve it? Will I ever get it? But also, once I get it, then what? So I think that can also be a deterrent. For me, when I finally found some peace in my life, it can feel boring. It can definitely be confused with boring, because there's a lack of the drama. There's a lack of this constant crisis going on in your head. You're just like at peace with your thoughts, and you're like, now what do I do?
I think, you're also seeking that dopamine hit in order to make things happen. So, yeah, that's a challenge too.
Yeah, dopamine is a hell of a drug. And as someone with ADHD, I know deeply how much like that seeking dopamine, and we can get dopamine through crisis. We get dopamine through those intense negative emotions, even. And that can be very difficult to overcome. In my work, I've come across people who are pretty much addicted to anger, addicted to being angry. And at the same time, there are people like myself who struggle to feel anger, because I was never allowed that. I always had to suppress that.
And in my case, even if I suppressed it, the response that my parents sent would be, "Oh, she doesn't have any emotions. She doesn't feel anything," and which was very hurtful to hear.
Yeah, a lack of being seen or understood by your parents.
And they feel like they can always have this authoritative mood and just direct you to stop your anger, or direct you to, start being happy. Doesn't work that way, does it?
No, just cheer up, the sun's shining today. You should be happy. So what's your main goal? What are you working on as far as improving your mental health? What do you see as your next step that you'd like to work on?
I think I would want to read more about emotional regulation, and have like some daily practice set up where I'm regulating my nervous system, not for somebody else's sake, but for at least my sake. Some people also view that as me being not so brave and being weak. because you're not responding back with anger, you're not responding back with violence, you're not responding back with aggression, right? And it's sometimes they also interpret it as, oh, you are the guilty one because you're not getting agitated or angry to defend yourself. So, yeah, and this he was weak too sometimes, but I think I'm coming to terms with, okay, I'll accept it because that is what's best for me.
Anger is supposed to be a protective emotion. So it's supposed to come in when you need, to signal to yourself that you need to protect yourself. And you can feel anger and not react in an explosive, unhealthy way.
Yes.
Just because you aren't, burning the world down doesn't mean that you aren't feeling that anger. And you could be past that point of anger. You mentioned working on some acceptance, and acceptance does help reduce anger quite a bit. And it's finding that healthy balance of, okay, anger is there to protect me. What if anger was a tool? Is this a tool that I could use or that I need right now? And if you're currently no contact with your parents, I don't see a purpose for that tool. It's one thing if you are experiencing anger when you think about these memories, and then you decide to cope with that anger in a healthy way. But if the anger just isn't coming up for you, if instead it's sadness, it's grief, it's shame, all of those emotions, that's perfectly healthy and normal and okay too. A lot of people respond first with anger, and that's not always the healthiest reason either. And I think that it's incredibly strong and brave for someone not to live in that space of anger, because anger protects you from feeling those more hurtful emotions.
You're right about that.
Yeah. If every time you thought of your parents, all you felt was anger, and you didn't feel that hurt and betrayal and sadness and grief and all that stuff, you probably would feel a lot better about it, right? Just anger, it's their fault. How dare they? Nothing complex about that.
Yeah, but I wish I could, I wish I had the resources to also make them see how I am seeing things. And I do not know if there's any resource out there that exists to make this happen, but yeah, I wish there was.
Even after I went no contact, I did have some conversations with my mother about her possibly having borderline personality disorder, mentioning to her, certain things that she did. Maybe she was too drunk to remember them, or she just forgot about them as soon as they happened. And in the moment, also probably because she was a little drunk when I was talking to her about that, she accepted it. And then, the next day, it's like we never had that conversation. Other people I've heard, it their parents react with anger. As we just discussed, anger protects from feeling that guilt and that shame and whatnot. Anger can tell you, no, I'm in the right. Especially when we're looking at the power dynamic between a parent and child. I was in charge. Look at you. You turned out great. You got your master's. you're in the world, like what's your problem? What's your issue?
I can relate to that.
Yeah. Everything that you did right is because I was a great parent, and everything that you did wrong is because you're a bad child.
And also, like, constantly, like, making you feel like not appreciating you, and always highlighting the faults but never highlighting the goods.
So, how did you feel about today's session?
It was great. It was great talking to you. I enjoyed sharing parts of my history with you, and I hope it benefits somebody out there.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. There was a lot of relatable stuff that you shared, and thank you, Raya, for coming on to the episode and being a part of this.
And thank you so much for having me.